Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Madeleine Albright is with us now, the former Secretary of State under President Clinton, now a Hillary Clinton supporter in the presidential race, and author of a new book called Memo to the President-Elect, How We Can Restore America's Reputation and Leadership. She also wrote the foreword to another new book called Her Story, or maybe they pronounce it Herstory, A Timeline of the Women Who Changed America. Secretary Albright, always great to have you on the show. Good morning.
Great to be with you, Brian. Thank you.
You know, the title of your book suggests to me that the number one job for the next president and secretary of state, as you see it, will be to restore America's reputation and leadership after the Bush administration damaged it. A Republican might say the number one job is to keep America safe. Do you think even the title of your book reflects a Democratic Party orientation?
No, because I actually think that the only way to keep America safe is to restore our leadership and our reputation, because we need to work with other countries to do that. But I guess if the title indicates that I am critical of the past 8 years, that would be correct.
Well, how would you begin to assess America's reputation in the world today?
Well, there are a number of different ways. I mean, there's a standard one that there are attitude surveys that are out there now, and I have been co-chair of one of them with former Senator Jack Danforth, a Republican from Missouri, with the Pew people. And we have tracked America's reputation over the last few years. And just as an example of one country, in 2000, our favorability ratings in Turkey were at over 50%. And then when we took the survey again last fall, they were at 9%. And that's a NATO ally. So that's just one example of a country. It's true in a variety of countries that our favorability ratings have gone down. The other, if you don't care about popularity, which is a different issue, is that it's very hard to persuade countries to work with us on a variety of issues. Secretary of Defense Gates is having a hard time persuading NATO allies to provide more troops for Afghanistan. So those are two kind of different variables, but I think it shows the problem.
Newt Gingrich was on the show recently, and he said this talk that was around at the beginning of the Iraq War about how the United States has alienated all its allies is really overblown for today's world when you look at the fact that the two leading antagonists in Europe of going to war, France and Germany, have elected pro-U.S. heads of state. What do you make of that?
Well, I think what's interesting is those two particular people got elected for a variety of different reasons, primarily economic issues within their own countries and not because of their stance on the U.S. And democracies are the ones that then make decisions as to how countries go to war. And what's interesting on the German case, while Angela Merkel is certainly more pro-American than Gerhard Schroeder, what happened was that right now there is a discussion going on as to whether the Germans are going to provide more troops to Afghanistan, and the people are basically pushing their elected leaders to say no. So I disagree with Newt Gingrich on this. I think that there is a widespread sense among the publics of various countries that the United States is not facing up to its problems appropriately. And frankly, I have to tell you, and I travel abroad all the time, people are very eager for new leadership in the United States. They, as much as many of us, are waiting for new leadership.
My guest on WNYC is former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. Her new book, Memo to the President-Elect, How We Can Restore America's Reputation and Leadership. We can take some phone calls for her at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Let me dig in on that Gates reference a little bit. The Secretary of Defense, I read where he admitted last week that Europe's anger at the U.S. war in Iraq, even now, is making it harder for them to commit troops to Afghanistan, even though they believe that war is necessary and just. Do you think that is exactly the situation?
Well, I think there definitely is a spillover. I think what was interesting, and you really have to keep this in mind, after 9/11, the European allies did something they'd never done before, is activate this Article 5 of the NATO Charter, which says an attack on one is an attack on all. It's the basis of all collective security. And the U.S. wasn't interested in really getting that kind of help. And partially, as we all know now, there was a trend away from paying attention to Afghanistan and all of a sudden deciding that the connection was with Iraq, and that Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden had been in cahoots, to put it simply. So we turned off a lot of the feelings that people had to support us on Afghanistan, and all of a sudden all the attention was in Iraq. And now, because I think we didn't do enough in Afghanistan initially, that situation is deteriorating. So I think it's natural that the allies and the people within those countries would say, what do you mean? You've spent all this time in Iraq now. Yeah. Now you want us to go back.
So how could the next president, McCain or a Democrat, repair that kind of breach in a way that the Bush administration can't? Because even if you disapprove of what you just described, it's already happened.
Well, I think that there's a big difference, frankly, as to whether it's a Senator McCain or a Democratic person, because Senator McCain has indicated that he wants to continue the war in Iraq. So that creates a different situation. Both Senator Clinton and Senator Obama have made clear that they want to end the war in Iraq. That would be a big step forward. And then both of them, frankly, have said that it's going to be very important to work with our allies, to consult with them ahead of time, not kind of take decisions and then expect them to salute. So I think there would be a very different approach. What I'm saying in my book, Brian, is not that this is going to be easy. In fact, I am saying this is going to be a very, very difficult presidency because there's so many issues to repair, including our own economy. But the bottom line is it will be better and easier with people who have a different approach.
And you're making the case, it sounds like, that getting out of Iraq with the risks that that entails, and it does entail some risks, would be better for the U.S. In the long run than staying in.
I do, because I have said, and I said it in my previous book, that I'm afraid that Iraq will go down in history as the greatest disaster in American foreign policy, which means that I think it's worse than Vietnam, not obviously in terms of the number of Americans that have died or Vietnamese versus Iraqis, but in terms of its unintended consequences. And the various aspect of what's going on in Iraq itself, the chaotic situation, the lack of a political solution, the fact that Iran has emerged as a regional power, and the kind of disquiet on the borders that makes the Iraqi defense minister say that we're going to have to stay there till 2018, means that there has to be a conclusion to it in a responsible way that deals with the refugees and reconstruction and pulls the troops out in a systematic way.
Let's take a phone call on this point. Bob on Staten Island. You're on WNYC. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. I remember in the 1980s all the protests in Europe and Western Europe of not wanting the cruise missiles, people out in the street saying they hated Reagan and that he was leading us to World War III. And then once the Cold War ended and the Berlin Wall came down, our biggest allies now are the Eastern Bloc countries, Poland, Estonia, and they're the ones supporting. They understood what you got to go up against totalitarianism and stand firm. I was wondering how Madam Secretary would address that.
Well, I think that the Europeans went through many different changes during the Cold War. There really was a difference between the Western Europeans and the Eastern Europeans, who I think were those who did feel obviously oppressed by the Soviet Union. I personally was born in Czechoslovakia, so I fully understand that. I think, however, we're dealing with quite a different situation now, where there's a European Union that's strong, that's bringing the Central and Eastern European countries in, so they have a different kind of pressure on them And I really do think that what we've seen is that the people in these countries do not like the direction in which American policy is going. But I have made another point, which goes to what you have said, is the United States didn't start World War One or World War Two, but when we saw that it affected our interests, we went in there and turned it around. I think we need to persuade the Europeans that what is happening in Iraq affects their national interest also, and that they have to be a part of it, and that they need to support the United States.
Thank you for your call, Bob. John McCain is now the Republicans' presumptive nominee. He is known as a supporter of the Iraq war, as we were discussing. But beyond that, is there a McCain approach to foreign policy that you can describe as you see it? Is he a Cheney-style neocon or something else beyond being for staying in Iraq or not?
Well, I know John McCain pretty well. We have a very interesting kind of cooperation. I'm chairman of the board of the National Democratic Institute, and he's chairman of the International Republican Institute. And these are organizations that were set up under President Reagan, the National Endowment for Democracy. So I do know that Senator McCain feels very strongly about the fact that we are all better off if surrounded by democratic countries. I am not an expert on Senator McCain's foreign policy. I do think that he is somebody that is more in the mode of carrying on the kinds of policies that President Bush has had than the Democratic candidates, who are making quite clear that they want to take a different tack. So I do think that Senator McCain, for a long time, has been saying that the surge works, that he would stay there, one quote, 100 years. So that is a really major difference between the two.
Well, 100 years or not, I mean, many Republicans and some others argue that the surge is working, but U.S. troops are needed to maintain that stability for at least a few more years before the U.S. can really get out without things falling apart.
Well, the bottom line is the surge is working because our military is fantastic and knows what it's doing, and they're figuring out how to deal with insurgencies. But it is not working from the perspective of what we were told it was going to be for, which was to provide an environment in which there would be political solutions. There is no military solution to Iraq. And that does not, the political part doesn't seem to be working. And I think if you go back to what the Iraqi defense minister said, that we had to stay till 2018, he's saying that because the border, he's concerned about the borders and weapons and bad people crossing. So what needs to happen is a surge in diplomacy where you see that where the countries in the region see that they have a stake in it, that there is what we did in the Balkans, a contact group that is countries on the outside that can put pressure on some of the political players inside. None of that has taken place. And the Democrats are basically saying you need that diplomacy and that that aspect. I think it is going to be hard to get all the troops out right away. There has to be a plan. There has to be some number of troops left there to deal with al-Qaeda, to protect our forces. But that's very different from having, you know, more than 150,000 troops. And now Secretary Gates is saying there's going to be a pause in withdrawing the troops that President Bush was talking about just a few weeks ago.
Diana in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. Hello.
Good morning. I'd just like to point out that, unfortunately, America has a history, as we all know, but unfortunately, I think is known more in other parts of the world in terms of its dealings with what it considers. Well, let's go back again. All from the times of Turkey with Mossadegh, with Lumumba, with Chile, with all those times when, unfortunately, America, in retrospect, has backed the wrong horse. And I think that people around the world are very aware of that kind of history. I also would like to point out, it's not all obviously a negative one, that people are also aware of the tremendous generosity of Americans, both in, certainly, you know, during the Second World War, the prime example, but in many other ways too. I mean, and it just seems to me that it's not quite as simple as just what's been going on in Iraq. That has exacerbated that particular historical memory. And I think it's important that people here understand the views of America outside this country. It's always been a big problem, as far as I can see, having lived here over 40 years, but also going back again, that America tends to see things in very black and white terms. I think that's also the whole phenomenon of the Cold War and now the so-called War on Terror. It's not that simple. And I think it's very, very important that people here generally, not just the administration, understands the complexities mm-hmm. and understands the way America is viewed in all
in the rest of the world.
Parts of the world.
Let me get a response from you, Secretary Albright.
Well, all I can say is I hope that people read my book, because this is exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about, is that it is very difficult. There are black and should not be in stark terms, that there are very complex issues that the next president is going to have to deal with them. It is very hard to simply say that you will never deal with a government you don't like, because ultimately you have to make peace with your enemies, not with your friends, and you need to deal with them. But it is, I think it's that discussion always between realism and idealism, and I do talk about all these things in my book, so I urge people to read it.
The book called Memo to the President-Elect, How We Can Restore America's Reputation and Leadership. Madeleine Albright with me for just another couple of minutes. I do want to touch on the presidential campaign. You are supporting Clinton over Obama. I guess you're close enough to her that you were in, I noticed, on the Iowa primary, Iowa caucuses night. You were on the stage with her with only Bill Clinton and New York Deputy Governor, Lieutenant Governor David Patterson, just the four of you, so you must be close to Mrs. Clinton. Tell us why over Obama, just in about 30 seconds.
Well, actually, there were a ton of us on that stage.
Well, the ones who were framed for the TV shot.
Whatever. Why am I for her? Because I do think that this is going to be a very difficult presidency, and it's going to take somebody that has had a lot of experience in all of this, knows the world leaders. I've traveled with her. I know how she's regarded. Also, who has the capability of having spent time in the villages and orphanages abroad. And the experience that she's had on the Armed Services Committee in understanding what the military is up against and then dealing, helping to deal with the veterans and their health problems when they come home. And so I know her very well, and I think that she is the most experienced candidate to deal with this mess of problems that I talk about in my book. But the book is for anybody who is going to win.
Of course.
Of either party or either gender.
It is interesting to me that we did a five-part series with editors of immigrant newspapers from, you know, newspapers in the United States, but for readers who are immigrants from different parts of the world. And every single one of them said, oh, my readership favors Clinton because she's so favorably seen in their home countries. And then we did a call-in for immigrants at one point, who you're going to vote for, and we heard the same thing overwhelmingly from immigrants from all over the world. But Obama supporters say he has an extraordinary opportunity to restore America's leadership as well because of his international pedigree. Kenyan father, lived for a few years as a kid in Indonesia. Muslim father, even though he's always been a Christian himself. Does that represent a special opportunity?
Well, I think the Democrats have a huge opportunity to present a totally different human face of America. And I think we are really lucky, and I think it's an interesting choice. I am for Hillary because I've seen her work, and I know how she deals with problems. I know how careful she is, how humane she is. And the reason that people know her is because when she traveled to a country, she didn't spend her time in a lot of fancy rooms. She went out and talked to people, went to AIDS clinics and women's groups and human rights groups, and yet was able to deliver the tough messages to the leaders. So we have a huge opportunity. I happen to fully support Hillary Clinton because I think that she is the right person for this election.
Are you a superdelegate?
No, I'm not.
So you don't have to get caught in that mess.
No. I spend some time talking to them, but I'm not. No.
Madeleine Albright, her new book, Memo to the President-Elect, How We Can Restore America's Reputation and Leadership. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a segment that will be very special to me and I hope to some of you. We will have the widow of the tennis star and humanitarian Arthur Ashe Jeannie Ash on the program, and we will symbolically turn over to her a tape of one of my favorite moments ever on this show, when Arthur Ashe called in 15 years ago to talk about Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. We'll replay that tape. Stay with us.